Does Friendly have a taste? If it does, it's probably like Hello's peppermint-flavored anti-plaque and whitening toothpaste. Brush away plaque, show tartar who's boss, and remove surface stains to naturally whiten. Hello's thoughtful and flavor-forward products make brushing your teeth feel like a confetti-filled bathroom dance party. So say hello to Hello with the always cruelty-free, never tested on animals toothpaste that's made to spread smiles. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.
CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. SpaceX, Endeavor, a scrub. Bob Zimmerman is here. He keeps the website Behind the Black to explain my shorthand. Bob, Endeavor was scrubbed, the Dragon capsule Endeavor. Why? What do we know about it, and when is it rescheduled?
Good evening, John. Endeavor is one of the fleet of four Dragon capsules, manned capsules, that SpaceX owns. And it was to bring a crew of four astronauts to ISS this week. The launch was originally scheduled for very late Sunday night, actually in the morning, into the morning hours of Monday. But unfortunately, 2 minutes before launch, they aborted. They called a hold, and then they canceled the launch, scrubbed it. And the reason they scrubbed it is because the ignition system on the Falcon 9 rocket, their sensor was not giving them confirmation that the chemical they used to ignite the engine was not fully loaded, apparently. They could not get data confirming a complete full load of this the chemical combo that they used to ignite. So because they couldn't get a sensor reading to confirm a full load, they decided we're not going to take a chance, and they said, we'll cancel, we'll scrub. They rescheduled this now for Thursday, the 2nd of March. Weather looks good for that date, and so we'll just have to wait and see. It's one of these situations with SpaceX. On the NASA launch, they're probably very careful to make sure everything is correct, and that makes sense. The crew was four astronauts, three rookies. The commander, Steve Bowen, was a very experienced pilot. Of the three rookies, you had an American, you had a Russian, and you had a citizen of the United Arab Emirates, that first astronaut flying to ISS as part of a tourist bill paid for to SpaceX.
We have a SpaceX success, however. Second-generation Starlink satellites. What does that mean, Bob? Why are they going to second generation?
Because they're more efficient. They launched 21 of these second-generation Starlink satellites. They actually call them V2 minis because they're a smaller version, though they're larger than the old Starlink satellites, but they're a smaller version of the second version 2 because the full-size versions of version 2 are made bigger to be launched on Starship. But to launch them on a Falcon 9, they make them a little bit smaller. And yes, they designed these to be more efficient, to have greater capabilities, to have more maneuverability. It's like any upgrade. You just make things better. The launch was interesting to me. This launch took place earlier in the day to the scrub of the Endeavor launch. The first stage was flying on its third flight. It landed on a drone ship in the Atlantic, completing that flight, and the fairings were completing their second flight. So SpaceX once again is reusing its ship. But more interesting than that, in terms of the whole world launch race, the number of launches and everything, right now SpaceX all by itself leads the rest of the world combined, excluding the United States, 13 to 12 in launches. In other words, SpaceX alone has launched more than every other nation in the world, every other nation or company in the world, and excluding the United States. There's been at least one rocket launched by Rocket Lab, so they're part of the U.S. And that's just indicating, once again, SpaceX's capability. The other thing about that Endeavor launch that I should point out That was only the second scrub for technical reasons that's occurred by SpaceX since 2020, which means they've done about 100 launches in the period of time. That means they launch as scheduled 99% of the time, excluding weather delays. That's an incredible record, and it demonstrates a reliability that I don't think any other launch company has ever achieved. No technical. They launch routinely nowadays, very routinely, and it's because of the manned flight. They're even more careful, which is probably the reason it was a technical issue.
The European Space Agency, learning from SpaceX and others, hire it, don't build it. They're building lunar satellites. What's the mission for these companies?
They're basically copying NASA, which was taking the advice of my policy paper from 2017, which says, don't be the builder, be a customer and hire. So the European Space Agency is now inviting European and Canadian companies to build for Europe lunar communications and navigation satellite constellations. These would orbit the moon and provide both a communications network as well as equivalent of GPS navigation information for facilities on the moon or maybe even in orbit around the moon. And the ESA is saying we want private companies to build it. Now, they seem to be following the pattern of NASA that didn't be the customer, but at the same time, it's Europe. And so if you look closely at their project, this whole program, it does appear that ESA wants to design these satellites. And the whole real idea is that you don't design them, you don't build them, but you just buy something that a private company designs and builds and then owns. But ESA wants to design these satellites and is simply looking for private companies to build them. If that's the agreement, even though ESA is saying the private companies that build these satellites will be able to sell the product to others, it's a good thing, which means they own it. It's really rare that a government that designs a satellite will allow a lot of freedom to any company that builds it. So I am a little bit skeptical about this turning out the way they say it is, but it does indicate ESA is trying to learn from the United States and NASA and go to private enterprise and capitalism, John, and that's a good thing.
Something implicit in this, Bob. They're establishing a constellation of communication satellites. That's what you said, around the moon. This would be a predicate for moon colonies. Is that how to understand this?
Yes. It has been the European Space Agency's number one goal to build lunar colonies. They want to build lunar colonies more than anything else. They're not focused on Mars as much. And so they would really, this is what they're looking for. Now, I should point out, they're asking European and Canadian companies to compete for these contracts. There's nothing to exclude other companies from other countries, including the United States, from doing the same thing and maybe doing it better and doing it sooner. And, you know, it's competition. This is all good. So, yes, it's aimed at eventually much more sophisticated operations on the moon, provide the services for those.
So our iPhones 35 will work on the moon. Good. We go to iSpace, which is a commercial enterprise, and you're updating the lunar lander Hakuto R1. Please explain.
Yes, Hakuto R1 is because they're going to have Hakuto R2 and R3, so I decided to add the number there so to make it clear. It's heading for the Atlas crater on the moon in the northeast quadrant of the face we see of the moon. It's going to land at the end of April. The CEO of Japanese company iSpace gave a media briefing on its status, basically saying the spacecraft is doing fine and is on target. This is an engineering mission, though it has payloads on it that are paid for by other customers, such as the United Arab Emirates Rashid rover. Their main mission was to test the engineering of their lunar spacecraft and their lander. And so what they've learned is that they've gotten tons of data. The engineering seems to be working. They have found that there's been some communications issues which teach them something, and they've also had some thermal temperatures hotter than expected. None of these affected operations, but it's something you learn from, and you maybe redesign later spacecraft. And they've got two more missions in 24 and 25, and they'll put what they've learned on this into those missions, John.
Now, the moon landings were at Mare Tranquillitatis. Atlas looks way to the north. where it's headed. Is there a reason for that? Is there something up there that we need to know about? It's got a rover.
The Apollo missions to the moon covered as much territory as a New York City taxi driver in a single day, which means they didn't see very much of the moon. So the whole point is to go to different places, John, and all the Apollo missions were basically near the equator or close to it. And so we're trying to get to other places. And it's Atlas Crater, you're dropping down into the middle of a crater that hasn't been seen before, and they'll get to look at other data. We have to also remember, too, that this particular mission, even with Rashid Rover, it's mostly a test mission for them to learn how to do such a thing. And so that's why they're going to a different place.
We have Astroscale looking to raise money. What is Astroscale?
Astroscale is a Japanese startup that is mainly focused on removing orbital space junk and also doing robotic satellite repair. They're not looking to raise money, John. They have raised money, and that's what's really cool about this. They'd already raised $300 million private capital, but they've now raised an additional $76 million in private investment capital, and it's the investors that gave the money that's interesting here. About a third of that money came from banks and investment corporations, but a third of it came from billionaire Yasuki Miyazawa. This is a billionaire. He's flown to ISS as a tourist. He's paid for a Starship mission. He's going to bring a bunch of artists and other journalists. He's paying for their flight to go around the moon on Starship. So he decided to invest $23 million in Astroscale. At the same time, Mitsubishi in Japan has also committed $25 million to Astroscale. So they both suggest that Astroscale is now on very solid financial ground, which means we have a company here that is focused aggressively and has the capital to build robotic satellites to not only repair satellites, but to remove space junk. One of those cottage industries, John, that are coming along that are going to fill in the gaps where we have needs that no one else now can have.
Another new company, which has an idea I like a lot, a floating ocean spaceport. What is the need, Bob?
Well, the spaceport company, that's its name, says it wants to build floating ocean-going space launch facilities. Essentially, and this has been done before. Sea Launch was a company that did it. Most platforms that launch at the sea are generally designed for a specific rocket. This company wants to build a platform that any rocket company can come and launch from. And they're arguing that they can take the platform to the best launch site, and at the same time, they can avoid a lot of the regulatory issues that prevent spaceports from getting built. And so that's their argument. Now, they haven't built anything. They're hoping to have a platform available to do suborbital test launches in the Gulf of Mexico later this year. And from there, they hope that will demonstrate the solidity of their idea, and they can raise money to build a full-scale sea-based platform that can move to a spot, lock itself down, and then allow rockets to launch from it. There's a lot of good things about this. There's a lot of technical problems for it. But you know what? Competition and freedom produces all these great ideas, and some pay off. And so all power to them, John.
What happened at the Cornwall Spaceport is an example of why this is a good idea. Virgin Orbit, as I recall, was waiting for clearance to launch. And because it was delayed, and then because there was a setback, Virgin Orbit is either no more or badly damaged because of Cornwall's regulations. I don't imagine at sea, Bob, you're going to have a regulatory environment.
There's going to be some regulatory involvement no matter what, because the modern Washington swamp, its tentacles now encompass the world. They just say we have to regulate everything, but there'll be reduced regulations. And it would be through the U.S., which is an advantage. Cornwall remembers the U.K. For launch regulatory issues, it would be better if in this manner. Yes, it's an advantage.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going to Mars. We're going exploring. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
What happened to her, Mario? How could she simply disappear after she was with you?
I don't have answers for that.
48 Hours at CBS News present.
I'm just going to ask you straight out. Did you kill Christy Wilson?
No, I had nothing to do with her disappearance.
Another season of My Life of Crime with Erin Moriarty. Award-winning correspondent Erin Moriarty brings you face-to-face with killers.
I will never say that I'm a cold-blooded killer. I will never say I'm a murderer.
And the people they took from.
My son died running for his life.
This season, follow the evidence with Erin, beyond the speculation, including in the death of boxing legend Arturo Gatti.
My gut says I don't think he would take his life.
I know my husband killed himself.
Listen to My Life of Crime from 48 Hours on Amazon Music or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Mo Rocca, and it's been a while. But I've been busy digging up even more stories about the people and things of the past that are fascinating me now.
What did your father think of the label, of the whole idea of the Latin lover?
From the screen idols who redefined Hollywood's leading man.
I think it was a love-hate relationship. My dad hated the word macho.
That's what I call the Latin lover type of a role, which is one-dimensional.
To the dog who introduced millions of kids to classic literature.
I remember, like, on my 10th birthday, I think it was, we were going to go mini-golfing, and I insisted, but we had to stay home for Wishbone first.
Listen to Mobituaries wherever you get your podcasts.
Now to exclusive reporting from CBS News.
Join Gail King, Tony DeCoppel, and Nate Burleson for original reporting. CBS Mornings, weekday mornings on CBS.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.
There's a time and a place for filet of fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.